This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Brian Humphreys, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse continues with NPPC's Brian Humphreys next. Today's open mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The nation's pork producers have high hopes for 2025. Swine producers hope for a farm bill with a solution for state mandates for production standards, continued access to global markets, better access to labor, and help to secure the borders and protect the herd from foreign animal disease. NPPC CEO Brian Humphreys, hopeful for better profit margins for producers.
The U.S. pork industry has gone through, the last 2 years have been some of the worst that we have ever seen in the pork industry. Losses that have affected not only small family farms and all the way up to some of the big folks. No one has been immune from the pain the last couple of years here. And while there are certainly some brighter days on the horizon, we hope, as we move forward, the reality is that we have a pretty deep hole to dig out of here as an industry, and some struggles. And so with that comes some obvious concerns about any disruptions that could happen there, as we look to maintain or help the industry recover from what have been a couple of very rough years here.
Is there a size of operation by scale that is more challenged in today's environment?
The reality is the last couple of years have been a challenge for folks of all sizes of operations. When you have high input prices and low pig prices, and then a potential disease issue, that becomes a real struggle. And I think as we look out at the past and into the future, I don't know if size of operation so much as the ability for the operation to stay healthy and maintain strong biosecurity protocols with a labor challenge and other issues out there is a big impact on our industry. And if they can keep pigs healthy and keep pigs moving, then it does certainly put them in a less tenuous position. Size and type of operation, that varies dramatically by each farm and each location and access to those to different tools and resources there.
What's the split between domestic and export demand as it pertains to price discovery in hogs?
We talk about that, right, that last year I guess in 2023, I haven't seen the final numbers for 2024 yet, but we exported $8.16 billion worth of pork in 2023. Roughly in the last year, somewhere around 25-plus percent of our products were exported. A couple of top markets, obviously, like Mexico, Canada, et cetera, have been tremendous opportunities for the U.S. pork industry. And that comes right around that $60 a head market, again, depending on where the market is. And as you said earlier, if we have an upswing, that goes up a little bit. If we go down, depending on the value of the dollar, a lot of things can impact that. But around that $60 a head mark per pig. And as we look at that, to your point, it all depends on where some of those products are going. If we're sending variety meats to Asia, then that has a certain dollar amount. But if we're sending hams and other things to Mexico, those are certainly at a different dollar point there. Depends on where those products are heading.
Does the value of the U.S. dollar to other currencies impact your export sales, or has demand been strong enough from our markets that they're still able to purchase and are continuing to purchase?
Continuing to purchase, certainly, but price matters. And if the dollar is strong, that creates a challenge out there for other countries as they look at where they're going to be buying their product from. But the work of U.S. Meat Export Federation and the National Pork Board over the years to really brand and drive the U.S. pork market in the international space has really helped to secure some of those relationships and demand for our product. I think they've done a nice job there. MPPC's job is to make sure those markets remain open and that there aren't artificial barriers put in place for access to those products. But to your point, price always matters.
Do you have a concern of the Trump administration and potential tariff threats? And are there some markets that would especially be vulnerable if that were to occur?
I have a concern, given that 25% of our product is exported in this industry, I have a concern anytime the word tariff is mentioned, regardless of administration. It is certainly a concern for us, and not only for the export side, but the importation as well. We do import in for our industry vitamins and minerals. We import equipment at times from different areas. We have an integrated supply chain with Canada and even into Mexico. And so that certainly raises some concerns that we'll continue to navigate and work through as we have in the past and will continue into the future. To the individual markets, you know, President-elect Trump has mentioned some specifically, and whether that's Mexico or Canada, but others as well. And we'll continue to have the dialogue there of not just the value to the U.S. pork industry and the American farmer of those markets and the importance of them to American agriculture and rural America that voted strongly for President-elect Trump, but also that how that impacts our ability here to raise those animals and crops and feedstuffs that we need as well. So those will be continuing conversations, absolutely.
In terms of exports, I'm talking about headwinds here. Are there other countries that are considering restrictions, whether antibiotics or feed additives or housing, that might impact our ability to sell in particular markets?
There certainly could be. And that's one of the reasons that MPPC exists, is to ensure that as those non-scientific trade barriers come up, that we get a seat at the table to ensure that there's pushback on those. And we have seen that in the past as some countries in Europe, for instance, try to push some of their partners to put those barriers in place, and we continue to push back. The reality is that the U.S. pork industry bases our decisions on sound science, and if the science is there, then we will support it and work through it. And if it's not there, the National Pork Producers Council will continue to work with USDA and USTR and the administration to push back as those countries put those in place.
From a global perspective, do you see sustainability and sustainable production practices as an opportunity or a challenge?
For the U.S. pork industry, it is absolutely an opportunity. Not only do we raise an affordable product in this country, but we do an outstanding job as the U.S. pork industry on raising pigs that are environmentally friendly, and the manure is recycled to grow the crops that feed the pigs. And we have been doing this not just when it became cool, but for generations. And so we have an amazing story to tell in sustainability that the rest of the world should look to and aspire to. And so we absolutely have a terrific story to tell there as American agriculture. And the industry has done a very nice job of cataloging those successes through the work of, again, the National Pork Board and the Checkoff, of putting those things together to be able to demonstrate that in actual numbers of the success and how far we have come as an industry over the generations.
There are those who oppose large animal feeding operations. They oppose the meat industry overall. How are the tactics of those who oppose meat production, how have they changed, and what avenues are you seeing that they're employing to try to tie the hands of meat production and of livestock producers in the U.S.?
This is an ever-evolving threat for our industry. Because, as you said, the groups that are bringing these accusations and charges are not about improving agriculture. They're not necessarily about improving the life of the animals or helping the farmers grow and be better. They're as you said, about damaging or ending meat production. If they were interested in making improvements, they would offer to sit down and we would have the conversation and talk about what we do on farms. But to your point, their tactics continue to change, and as they bring their and push their objectives through the legislature and don't find any traction there, because as you sit down and have conversations about what they're looking for, folks that work in agriculture, understand agriculture, can recognize these challenges and threats. And so these evolve, and they go to things like ballot measures or legal challenges. In fact, earlier this year, we dealt with a legal challenge related working with the EPA related to the CAFO permitting process. A group called Food and Water Watch and some of the others brought a challenge to the EPA on how they regulate and look at the permitting process for the U.S. pork industry and for permitted facilities. And working with our partners at Farm Bureau and others, we pushed back on that because essentially, long story here, essentially what they were trying to do is right now, if you are a permitted livestock operation, you are innocent of pollution until proven guilty. And our folks do a phenomenal job of keeping up their records, doing things by the book, going above and beyond existing regulations to ensure that they're taking care of their family farms and the communities that they live in. And yet these groups wanted to switch that to say that by being a permitted facility, you are guilty until proven innocent. And went all the way to the courts, and the courts threw it out. And that's another example of the challenges that they are bringing at the industry that we have to continue to remain vigilant of and watch and ensure that we're engaging on behalf of the American pork producers. And, but to your point, their tactics continue to change and evolve. And our job is, as the industry continues to grow and evolve and, get better, not only for the pigs, but for the people that work on these farms, to protect their ability to do so.
Well, California's Prop 12 was a ballot initiative that is still in place. What challenges are being presented now to producers because of this state's law? And do you have any hope for a resolution?
Oh, I always have hope. I think as we look at this, that was passed in 2018 and implemented just a couple of years ago. And since implementation, the poor folks in the state of California have seen an almost 20% increase in the price of bacon, which President-elect Trump campaigned on during throughout the summer. They've seen a 40% increase. I want to repeat that, 40% increase in the price of pork loins in the state of California. And so this is a challenge not only for the producers and the packing community to navigate, but it is a real challenge for the consumers of California. Ultimately, though, at the National Pork Producers Council, our goal is to ensure that changes that are brought about are brought about for the betterment of the pigs, for the industry, and based in science. And this law in California was none of those. But our bigger, deeper fear is the creation of a patchwork of legislation or regulation like this. And so if we don't get a federal fix in Congress, the reality is that other states could go down this path and create arbitrary standards and force pork producers outside of their state to comply in order to be able to sell product. And this really, at the end of the day, is a state's rights issue. The state of California should not be legislating and regulating the farmers in Iowa or Missouri or North Carolina or Minnesota. And the farmers in those states should not be regulating farmers in the state of California. And this is where Congress needs to step in. And we agree with the Supreme Court. This is a problem, but Congress needs to fix it. And that's what the Supreme Court said in their ruling a couple of years ago. We've been working with members of Congress. Had some tremendous progress and a lot of great conversations. There was a language in to fix it, and Representative G.T. Thompson's bill that came out of bipartisan out of the House Ag Committee. And while we ultimately were unsuccessful in getting a farm bill passed last year, we certainly look forward to continuing those conversations this year about protecting states' rights and ensuring that farmers can have some political stability to take care of their animals and continue to make business decisions.
Are there some growers that are complying with the California law, and maybe they don't want to fix because now they have a market that only a few can satisfy?
Yeah, we certainly have some folks in our industry who have complied and are able to sell that product into the state of California. The individuals, though, that I have talked to are still concerned about a patchwork. And so while they certainly have access to the California market, at the end of the day, they remain concerned that with if this continues, that another state could create a different set of arbitrary standards that would create yet another challenge for them or require new buildings or new facilities or complete remodels in order to come into compliance. As an example, right now, we have question 3 in Massachusetts and Prop 12 in California. If you're compliant with question 3, you are not necessarily compliant with Proposition 12. And that presents a challenge for our farmers to be able to navigate. And so, yes, there are some individuals who have built these facilities and completely understand their desire to do so. But they ultimately, the ones I have talked to, do not want to see a patchwork across the country.
Brian, the Beagle Brigade Act was recently signed into law. Here's the bigger question for you. Are the borders secure? And what else needs to be done to protect the borders?
I do want to give a shout out to Senators Warnock and Ernst and Representatives Bishop and Ferguson for helping to get that across the line. The Beagle Brigade is a tremendous step forward for all of agriculture, not just livestock or the pork industry, but all of agriculture as we build out that resource to ensure that we have those beagles at the ports of entry to help inspect bags and packages coming into the country to prevent foreign animal diseases or crop diseases, other things into this country. And so very glad to see that across the line at the end of the year when so many other things were going on. So terrific win there. Are we secured 100%? No. It is a constantly evolving threat that we'll continue to have to work on. The Beagle Brigade is a tremendous step forward. But the reality is we still need a farm bill that works to address the components of the three-legged stool for prevention and preparedness of a foreign animal disease that would add things around animal health, would add components in there around the labs and add things for the veterinary stockpile, countermeasures, vaccine bank, et cetera. So we have a ways to go, but this is a tremendous step forward as we look at that. The other part of that I would jump into from here is the traceability. And so while we have the Beagle Brigade, one of the other components that the pork industry needed to work on was the ability of traceability. And so earlier this year, the industry worked to put together some proposals that we sent off to USDA around traceability of pigs through the system so that in the case of a foreign animal disease, we would be able to find those animals and ensure that we could respond as quickly as possible to a foreign animal disease. And so we've made tremendous progress, but we have a long ways to go.
Well, there were a lot of commodity groups that wanted to see a farm bill in 2024, instead an extension. If there is a farm bill to come in 2025, what would the National Pork Producers Council like to see inside it?
First and foremost, as it has been for a couple of years now, is a solution to Proposition 12 and the potential for a patchwork. The other one, as we continue to talk about, and we mentioned trade earlier, but the need for MAP and FMD funding and foreign market development funding to ensure that we can continue to promote our product around the world is incredibly important for us. And then, as we talked about just a moment ago, the ability to protect from foreign animal diseases and prevent foreign animal diseases comes back to our animal health three-legged stool. And that is around making sure that there's funding in there for animal disease management programs, but also to focus on diagnostic capability, vaccine capacity, things like the National Animal Health Lab Network, NALMS Labs, the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program, the Veterinary Stockpile, and, of course, the National Animal Vaccine Veterinary Countermeasures Bank. All of those are included within the drafts that were out last year for the Farm Bill, and we look forward to having them included again as we move forward here.
One of the other concerns for agriculture is labor. Is a lack of an adequate workforce still a concern? And does the threat of deportation from the Trump presidency concern your industry?
Labor is absolutely continues to be a concern for our industry. These are great jobs out in the countryside. And yet the reality is that where most of our operations, where most of agriculture is, unemployment is incredibly low. In some of the areas where we're operating these farms, unemployment can be less than 2-2.5%. And that becomes a real struggle to find individuals with the capability, understanding this, and desire to want to work with livestock. And they can be wonderful and rewarding jobs, but it does take a certain individual that wants to work with animals all day. And that can become a struggle. And the U.S. pork industry's perspective has been for a number of years that we'll work with folks. And if they want to come in from, you know, the big cities in this country, we'll be happy to work with them. If they want to come in from other countries, and we can do so legally, we would certainly be willing to do so. It would be, as this next administration looks at enforcement of laws, it would also be of consideration to look at the legal avenues for folks that want to come here and work and create lives, or at least help out on farms to navigate that. And things like the year-round H-2A that our farms don't qualify for now would be a solution there. And so as they move forward here, looking at opportunities to streamline and update legal avenues for folks to come in and work in these operations would be tremendous for our folks.
Brian, the packing industry might suggest that line speeds are directly correlated to their margin and ability to make the most of running animals through their facilities. Has that situation resolved itself?
Very, very pleased that the outgoing Biden administration was able to extend the NSIS, or New Swine Inspection System, through May 15th. That is a tremendous step forward for us as we continue to work with the incoming Trump administration on making this permanent for the industry. There are some challenges to this over the years, but the reality is this has been in place for a number of years. It has continually proven itself to be not only safe and viable for the workers in the plant, which is, of course, the first and foremost concern, but also the ability to run those lines effectively and efficiently to help the industry produce the high-quality pork that the American consumers want. If for some reason this were to go away, the cost to the industry could be as high as potentially $10 a head. And as we talked earlier, the struggles that our industry has faced over the last couple of years, we simply can't afford that. And I look forward to those conversations with the Trump administration on how to make this permanent, how to make this work for our industry as we move forward here.
On Capitol Hill, there has been plenty of words spoken about competition and the lack of competition in agriculture. Has the topic of price discovery and competition made its way into the boardroom of the Pork Producers Council and among meetings? And do you have concerns as well?
This has been a topic of discussion for our industry for as long as I've been around. And everything from LMR, or livestock mandatory reporting, to the way that the reports are put together. And it's a healthy conversation. It's a dialogue that should be had among folks to ensure that competition remains viable out there for everyone. And so, yes, it remains a discussion. And we've had those conversations as staff with the folks at USDA, as well as within the industry, and continue to have those conversations. And so I think it goes back to the discussion around transparency and openness in the markets. And are we continuing to evaluate those as an entire industry, of what does that look like and how can we continue to make improvements? And that's something that we'll continue to have conversations with the folks at USDA and legislators as we move forward to ensure that we have a balance there to ensure competition amongst the industry.
Brian, let's talk about 2025. What are your variables and what are your hopes?
First and foremost, my hope is that this industry, the U.S. pork industry, is profitable, and that the American consumer and the consumer worldwide continues to enjoy a healthy and delicious product at pork at a rate that they've never seen before. And so for all your listeners out there, I hope they buy two or three pork chops when they were planning on buying one, and maybe 4 pounds of bacon instead of just two, and the world will be a better place. But as we look at the challenges facing the industry, the incoming administration has talked a lot about trade. We need to continue to engage there and be vocal. And then I hope to see a farm bill done before the end of 2025 that has a solution to Proposition 12 that provides the political stability that this industry needs to be able to make business decisions moving forward. And so as we wrap up here, I'm hoping for a profitable 2025 for our industry and the end of some of the political uncertainty that we have faced around Proposition 12.
Well, Brian Humphreys, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. And Brian, you've been here before. You know that open mic means that our guest gets the last word.
For all the pork producers out there, I know it's been a rough couple of years, and as we move forward as an industry and as an organization here, we remain committed to ensuring that we do everything we can to create the political stability you all need to make decisions. And for everyone in agriculture, it's been a rough couple of years for the grain side and the hog side. And as we look to passing a farm bill in 2025, know that all the ag groups are working together and ensuring that we're doing everything we can to help out and ensure that you all have what you need included in the farm bill and that stability to be able to make decisions moving forward. But thank you all for everything you do to feed not only the United States, but the world.
Our thanks to Brian Humphrey, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.